Welcome to the AWS podcast, hosted by Simon Alicia and Miles Ward. This is your regular update of new services, deep dives, and technical tips. If you'd like to share your feedback, please use the email or Twitter links at aws.amazon.com/podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the AWS podcast, episode number 77. Awesome to have you back here. My name's Simon Alicia, Principal Solution Architect, located here in Melbourne, Australia. And joining me, as he does these days, is the amazingly talented and quite hirsute Mr. Miles Ward. G'day, Miles. How are you doing?
Hey, Simon. How are you doing today? I have been on too many continents in the last couple of days. Excited to join you almost unpredictably from Seattle, Washington today.
Wow, there you go. So, you know, when I choose my podcast co-host, I always ensure they rack up lots of frequent fly miles. So it's good to see that you're living up to the expectation that we've set in the past.
Doing my best.
So we've got a bunch of updates and a black belt tip to share with the listeners today. And I think it'd be great to start with something called Data Pipeline. It's got a bit of an update in terms of its regional availability, but perhaps, Miles, we should step back and remind our listeners what you can use Data Pipeline for.
So the data pipeline is a service for ETLing or extracting, transforming, and loading information from one data resource to another. Maybe that's an on-premise system that you have to bring it into Redshift. Maybe it's moving from our S3 service over into RDS. All of those kinds of movements and transforms of data can be instrumented using data pipeline. It's this tool that orchestrates that movement. A big part of what makes it so nice is that it's deployed on a big distributed infrastructure which AWS manages. So you don't have to worry about how much compute you need or how many network devices you have to have set up. All that stuff's handled by us. We make it super straightforward to just get the data that you have in place one over into place two.
Yeah, it's a cool service because that sentence sounds so easy, doesn't it? I just want to move my data from here to there. But as we know from an architectural standpoint, there are all kinds of complexities and challenges and undifferentiated heavy lifting involved there. So having a service like this makes it easy. And just as a reminder, the types of services you can interact with are things like Amazon S3, the Relational Database Service, DynamoDB, and of course, Amazon Elastic MapReduce. So Miles, the folks in the US have had a great opportunity to have this service available from the US East region for a long time. But we now have four more regions available, don't we? It's pretty exciting. I'll rattle them off quickly and we can talk about how you might take advantage of that. So as well as being in US East North Virginia, we now have available in US West Oregon, the EU in Ireland, Asia Pacific Tokyo, and of course my home territory, Asia Pacific Sydney. So it gives us a few more choices, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about if you're a global multinational business and you have reporting services that are running in your Sydney headquarters, but you want to be able to sync that data over to local data warehouses that are used for projections and analysis as far away as the other side of the planet in London. You can do that work orchestrated by data pipeline across the different regions, irrespective of where that data originally resides. You also have the ability to do the low latency work of migration between services inside of a region in each of those different areas, right? So that both of those are new features, new capabilities.
Absolutely. No, makes it a lot easier. So take a look if you're interested in moving some data around. So speaking of data, the Amazon Relational Database Service, RDS, is a hugely popular service with our customers because it just makes creating, managing, backing up, and replicating a database really, really easy. Now, of course, we support different database engines. So we support MySQL, PostgreSQL, SQL Server, Oracle, to name the four that we support currently. And what we've done is we've announced, or see, it's always the royal we, isn't it, Miles? All these things that you and I have done, it's really the service teams that have worked really hard to do this for our customers, which is great. So the RDS team have made it possible to now deploy RDS instances on the new M3 database instance types. So these new instance types give you a similar ratio of CPU and memory resources as our previous M1 database instance types, but you get 50% more computational capacity per core. So this gives you basically more bang for your buck, more compute power per node. The other nice thing is that these instances are priced around 6% lower than the original M1 instances. So now you've got higher and more consistent compute performance at a lower price. What's not to like, hey, Miles?
I challenge any of our listeners to go find your local friendly DBA and have them tell you they want a slower database.
This is true. This is true. Now, people like numbers. They like stats. And they liked optimizations. And as we know, the storage layer is often the bane of the existence of a DBA and an infrastructure person to try and get the database running properly. So with these new instances, the DBM3 extra large and the DBM3 2x large are both optimized for provisioned IOPS storage. So this means you can lock in the IOs per second that you want at your storage layer. So, for example, with a workload that's 50% writes and 50% reads running on a M3 2x large instance type, you can get up to 12,500 IOs per second for MySQL and 25,000 IOs per second for Oracle and Postgres. So this gives you a great option to create high-performance databases that run really consistently wherever you like. And the great thing is that this is available in all of the regions with GovCloud support coming in the very near future as well.
Really amazing step forward. The piece to pay attention to, Simon, I'm sure you know this. I mean, these are just big leaps forward in performance. Database applications are always sort of starved for that kind of resource. And being able to use these new instance types, I think there's a whole nother range of applications that are targetable with the ease of use that RDS already provides.
Exactly. Just steps up what your possibilities are, and that's yep. Got to be a great thing from a customer perspective. Speaking of good things for customers, one of the tools that we provide as part of our business support and enterprise level support is a tool called Trusted Advisor. And Trusted Advisor, I'm a huge fan of Trusted Advisor. It basically takes and automates a whole bunch of really useful checks on your account, on your configuration, things like cost, security, fault tolerance, performance. Automates this process, gives you a really neat dashboard to monitor it, allows you to notify people when there are options to improve your environment, etc. It really is a nice holistic check, and it's certainly something we want to continuously be adding checks into. And Miles, we've got a new one from the team on the Trusted Advisor side, don't we?
Yeah, so I'm super excited about Trusted Advisor too. The record check keeps going up, so now they have 32 distinct evaluations against your account. That all happens as a part of business level support. The new one is CloudFront Content Delivery Optimization. So what that means is it looks through the access records against your S3 buckets to evaluate if CloudFront would improve the performance or reduce the latency of access to content in S3. So let's say, for example, like lots of people use S3 objects as backups and they don't get accessed from the web very frequently, but some other users put up a picture and that's something that they put on a website, say for a giant internet site like Reddit or who knows. So those kinds of objects, they really benefit from the CDN caching that CloudFront provides. So this test helps you just double check. Maybe you're not sure which objects are being used for what, and this will give you a clear idea of helping pick out the ones that are the right things to cache.
Exactly. And that can be the challenge, is identifying where to do the optimization. This just makes it a little easier. And as you mentioned, CloudFront helps you deliver your contents faster from edge locations that are closer to your end users. And also, if you do have more than 10 terabytes of data being transferred per month, then it can also help you lower that data transfer cost as well. So saving money is always a good thing. Now, I remember when I've talked to customers about Trusted Advisor in the past, they've often said, "This is great, I love it, but I kind of forget to go in and check it from time to time. It would be really neat to get a notification about what's going on." So you now have the ability to do that. You can have up to 3 recipients per account, can get a weekly status update and saving estimation, both in English and Japanese. Now, Miles, we have a lot of listeners in Japan. This is available bilingually, and it's another great way to keep up to date with what's going on in your account.
Ohayou gozaimasu. Watashi wa Nihongo suki desu. So really excited about being able to help our Japanese listeners use these tools. The notifications, another trick to remember for those is it's being sent to an email address, but that it doesn't mean that it doesn't have to, or that it couldn't be an aliased email address. You could have however many people get that notification on your side by managing emails. So there's a lot of value here in Trusted Advisor. I think everybody in any language would agree.
Absolutely. And I'm definitely not going to challenge your Japanese skills against my Japanese skills, Miles. Now, we're going to wrap up with a black belt tip. And I thought, you know, what are we going to do for our black belt tip this week? And then I thought, hang on, I have probably the uber overlord knowledge master of the Elastic Block Store EBS as my co-host of the podcast. So why don't I give it over to you, Miles, to talk to our listeners about some black belt tips, the fundamentals, if you like, that they should always remember when getting the most out of the Elastic Block Store.
Sure. EBS is an amazing tool. The ability to snapshot data from persistence block storage into S3 is so powerful in improving the overall durability of your data that it can't be underestimated. So first black belt tip is smash the snapshot button with ruthless efficiency. There's no reason that you shouldn't be using our SDKs or using even scheduled tasks for PowerShell for Windows users to cyclically trigger the snapshot function. That backup is the kind of thing that you don't really think about too often, but when you're able to come back to it, is exactly the kind of thing that saves bacon. So another important thing from a performance standpoint, remember that lots of the different instances in the EC2 catalog support a function called EBS Optimized. That creates additional dedicated network bandwidth and reduces the jitter of communications to and from the EBS network fleet and AWS, the EC2 systems. So that flag, if you're actually using EBS storage on a regular basis, say you've built a NoSQL database or a relational database, those kinds of flags are really crucial to ensuring best performance from EBS. Maybe a third tip, a last piece, we have a Trusted Advisor check to evaluate both for over-provisioned EBS volumes and for under-provisioned IOPS EBS volumes. Or if you're using a standard EBS volume in a way that would probably be better served by a provisioned IOPS volume. So check your Trusted Advisor for those pieces. One last piece to double check. Lots of folks, if you're building a database, haven't paid attention to the block size of that is the default or the configured setting for your database. It's really crucial, particularly for provisioned IOPS EBS volumes, to recognize the ratio of block size that's the default in PIOPS, 16K, in comparison to the block size for your database, which can vary from anywhere from 1K to hundreds of K in big data warehouses. So make sure that you've configured the provisioned IOPS value correctly for the ratio of your block size operations, the ones that come from your database, as respective of the natural size of provisioned IOPS is 16K.
Awesome tip. That block size one, super critical for databases, as you say, Miles. So a very good tip for our listeners. So time to wrap up. We've hit the end of our time. As always, we really do love getting your feedback, awspodcast@amazon.com or at awspodcast on Twitter. We love your feedback. We also do love it when you share word of the podcast with others, because almost without fail, people say, I didn't know that you had a podcast. I've started listening. I'm catching up on old episodes. So it's really great when listeners get to discover that this resource is here. So look forward to talking to you again next week. And thanks, everybody. And thanks, Miles.
Thanks a bunch.
See you later. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. We love getting your feedback, so please contact us on Twitter at AWS Podcast or via email awspodcast@amazon.com. Theme music provided under Creative Commons by Miles Rogers, audiofarm.org/audiofiles/22275.